welcome each one of you. And also I want to thank each one of you to have come here today to give your time. One thing which I want to let you know that it's really a genuine gratefulness because in today's world, especially in such a busy life, it's very difficult to give our time to anybody. If you have to shell out some money, shell out some gifts, give something, it's relatively easy, it's not difficult. But if you have to give your time, it's something which is very, very difficult. Why? Because once you give your time, you will never get it back again, even when you give the wealth of the entire world, correct? So time is money. Time is actually the most essential or most valuable part of our life. And today you have decided to be here with us and share and allow me to share my experience or whatever I have learned from Gita about soul. And I'm very grateful to you all that you have given me this opportunity to share this knowledge. It's mainly based on little bit of rational thinking, common sense, some scientific basis also. And then definitely the whole framework is outlined based on Bhagavad Gita, which is the most ancient Vedic literature, which we generally refer to. So if I ask you today, what in the next 1 hour we are going to share, to look at, these are the things which we are going to look at. What is our real identity, the body or soul? Is there any benefit of knowing whether I am body or soul? If it's not going to matter, why am I wasting my 1 hour of next 1 hour of life? So let's also look into it, that what is the benefit of knowing our real identity? Difference between the dead and dead matter and spirit. As we all live in a scientific world, modern world, and we come, most of us I'm sure are from scientific background, and anything you tell today, next thing we want to ask, what is the proof? Can you prove it scientifically, right? We don't want to have any blind faith or blind just acceptance of things. We should actually ask, and it's right. So we will discuss some of the proof of existence of soul. And then if there is a soul, then can I see it? Correct? Because seeing is believing. Would any one of you here is interested? Is any one of you is interested in seeing the soul if it is possible? Anybody? Yes. If it is possible, we would like to see the soul, right? So can I see the soul? Then what are the... I will have some quotations from the famous personalities. And then we will, based on Bhagavad Gita, we will see what are the characteristics of soul. And last is, what is the position of a soul in relation to the supreme whole, which we sometimes also will call it as God or Lord. Okay. So then my first question to you here is that we all have our identity, which is unique, correct? No two people are same. We all know this. So if I ask you today that we have been in this world for last 20, 25, 30, 40 years, right? And obviously we should know, who am I? Correct? If somebody in your house is going out and you ask that person, where are you going? I don't know. When will you come back? I don't know. How you are going? I don't know. Will you allow that person to go out? We will think there is something wrong. If somebody is going, we need to know what is the destination. We should be clear in our idea. Similarly, if we are existing in this world, which is also a journey, we all know there is a journey, right? We have come, we are passing through, and one day we all will exit. Any exceptions? No. So we all will exit. So in this journey, is it not the first question we should know? Who am I and what is the purpose of my journey? So first question is, who am I? Can any one of you share with me what is your understanding of your identity? Can I request some of the new faces here? Anybody? Okay, I can tell you. If you ask me, already Himanshu introduced me. I'm Dr. Niketa. I'm a radiologist. I'm a female. I'm an Indian citizen, right? Anybody else would like to give any of your different angle of your identity? either we all know too much or we are still confused. If we are confused, then this definitely will help us to reach somewhere to know our identity. Generally, when we come across this thought, who am I? We will say, I'm a human, I'm a male, I'm a female, I'm so and so by my profession, right? So we say doctor, engineer. But is this what we are born with? Is this what we actually are always going to be with? Is this our real identity? Real identity means the identity which will not change, which will never change, that stays with us in all our circumstances. So if you say that you are a male or a woman, is it possible to change it? Today is not possible. Yeah, probably if it, a century ago, they couldn't imagine it was possible, right? But today we know it's possible. Okay, if I say I'm an Indian, is it possible to change? Many of us are already in that position. We were Indians and now we are Singaporeans, probably, right? So it can change. I'm a doctor. Can it change? Yes, it can change. I'm a son, I'm a mother, whatever, there are so many identifications, but does it change? It is changeable, it is possible to change. There is no guarantee that it's going to remain same, and that is why it's not our real identity. What is our real identity? Which stays with us from beginning to end, or I should rather say, beyond the external end of this life. That is our real identity. Let's discuss this in little more detail. This is Dr. Henry Monson, who is a professor of anatomy at Illinois College of Medicine. And he has published this, that most of our body is made of water. We all know, right? More than 60% of our body is water. And then he has divided into calcium, phosphate, potassium. And so if like a today's financial manager or a person who calculates in terms of value, if I calculate the value of my body, how much it comes to? 60% water. Okay, so if I am 100 kg, 60 kg of water, how much would it cost? $120? I don't think so. Okay, mineral water, $120. Okay, accepted, maximum $120. How much is this calcium in your body going to cost? How much is the phosphate? How much is this? And all this element put together. I don't think it is going to cost more than a few hundred dollars. Correct? So if the value of my this existing body is about a few hundred dollars, okay, we just put it figure as $500, and I'm traveling in a car, Mercedes-Benz. What is the cost of Mercedes-Benz today? $300,000 at least? Okay. It meets with an accident. The car is crashed. And so am I. Few hundred thousand dollars versus few hundred pounds, few hundred dollars. Which is the thing you are going to give your attention to? Whom you are going to rush to? The mechanic who is going to repair? The person who is injured or the car which is $100,000? Person, are you sure? You're not a good businessman. Come on. Is it really true that we do care for that just 100 pounds or $100 worth of a living entity which actually costs much less, but there is something which gives its value? And what is that? That is what is our real identity. And that is what we call as soul. So if you really think that am I just a bundle of few chemicals, then we all know for sure I'm not. I'm not this body which is made of just water, calcium, phosphate and so. I'm not. Otherwise, nobody is going to rush me or give me more importance than this 100,000 worth of other things. I'm more worth than this dead matter. Any objections? Any comments? Yes, please.
What is the point in identifying something?
Correct. This is one of the points which will come through, that what is the point in knowing that I'm body or I'm soul or I'm more than that? If there is no advantage of knowing the difference, then why am I wasting my time? Correct? That's what you are saying, right? So we will come at little later stage. What is the importance of knowing your identity, whether you are body or whether you are something more than that?
Right.
We'll come to it.
Why should we identify? And what makes us identify?
Okay, what makes us identify? This is just a common sense which we just identified, that we are more valuable. And for what is the first part you said?
What's the point in identifying one thing? Why does it make us identify? That's the question.
Why do we identify with our body? That's what our question is.
Why do we identify? That was my question.
Okay. Why do we identify with our body? Is this what your question, right? Or what is, why do
we identify with our thing?
Oh, why do we identify with anything?
Yes.
Okay. Do we all identify with anything or no? Why? Why? Because we are not animals. We are intelligent. And we need to know the difference. There is some difference between those who can have rational thinking versus those who just take the...
Animals have rational thinking.
Yeah, but...
they do perform all type of calculations and stuff.
Perfect. Perfect. Very true. The animals also do most of the things which even we do. It is also given in scriptures that eating, sleeping, mating and defending are common. It's just that probably in human form, we are doing it in a more better way. Probably they might just sit on the corner of the road and they would be eating, or we go to the restaurants and with spoon and fork we eat. As he said very, very correctly, that they also have rational thinking. If you have a stick in your hand when you are going, and when you have something attractive, food in your hand, other hand, the animal is not going to come close to you knowing that you have a stick. Why? Because the animal also has rational thinking that probably you might beat it. So they are also intelligent. They are also have thinking. But there is one thing which is missing in them, is a questioning power. We can question. When we are faced with some difficulty, somebody comes and slaps you, correct? You will ask that person, excuse me, may I know why have you done this to me? The dog never comes and asks you when you beat. When we come and when we suffer in this world, or when we see difficulties, when we have obstacles, we think, why am I suffering? Why is bad thing happening to good people? I have never done anything bad to anybody. Why is this happening to me? Is there something which I can do which can stop this cycle of good and bad karmas? Versus an animal or a lower species who will not have this questioning capacity. And that is what is given already in the scriptures also, that these are the four things, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, are common between animals and humans. But there is only one thing which makes them different, and that is dharmo hi tesham adhiko visheshu dharme nahina pashubhi narana. This means that only the distinguishing factor between a human and another species of life is dharma, and they ask, what is my occupation, which we talked about last time. Those who were there last time, it was described by Shiva very nicely, what is the dharma or what is the occupation of our life. Do any one of you remember who were here last time? What was the most important occupation which he described?
Serving.
Yes. Okay, so we go to the next point. That once we understand that we are not chemicals, we are different or something higher than chemicals, and that is what we call as soul. The soul is with which we, the soul was born in this body. It passes through this journey throughout the life, and at the end, the body and soul are separated. We will see next what happens to the soul when it goes ahead. But what is the message at this moment I'm making is, that we are not just the body, we are not just made of chemicals, but we also have something important in it, and that is what we call soul. Next is, what is the proof of existence of soul? Let's talk about some important way of understanding why do we believe that there is a soul. Why I don't just agree that I'm just this body and there is something more inside. So there are five different ways which we will can see. First is common sense, then there are different ways, intuitive understanding, presence of consciousness, near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences, past life memories. So first is common sense. Many times we see that we use a word, common sense is not very common, correct? But I think what we are going to talk is something which is very, very common, right? What is the difference between a live and dead body? If you see, now based on science, a person who has just died, if you see, the body is just the same. But you get the message, text, so-and-so has passed away, correct? When you go there, you see the body is there. Same hands, same legs, same eyes, same head. Everything is there. But people will say, Mr. So-and-so passed away. But till yesterday, you thought this is the same person who has passed away. It means something which was there along with this bunch of chemicals which was making this body inside it has passed away. This is not very common sense. Simple, very common. The body which was very strong and could carry 2-3 people on his own body, on himself, now cannot carry himself and has to be carried by other 4 people. Those who believe into rituals. Generally, when we go to meet somebody or somebody who is very close to us, we generally clean ourselves, wash our hands, and then go and meet and maybe hug that person or touch that person, right? But as soon as the body is lying on the floor, lifeless, when you touch, when you come out of that place, what do people do? They go, wash their hands, and they take bath. The same person you always wanted to be alone together, you just see a wife who desires that she is there in a room with her husband alone or with her lover alone. If some relatives or somebody is always coming in between, she thinks, why? Why can't they just leave me with this person alone? Just the time when the life has gone, the same lady would not like, probably would not have courage to be in that room alone. Is it not common? Have you seen this? Somehow there is a fear. I have seen this personally. Being a doctor, I see day in and day out when people die. They're very close relatives. If you have to have one night in the same house, there is some type of feeling of vacuum. Not only that, there is a fear, there is an anxiety. Now you want people to be around with you. You wanted to be with this person alone just a while ago. What has happened? Because the soul has gone. This is common sense. That we are not this body. We are, but we are not only this body. We have this body, but inside the body, who we love, who we care for, who we relate to, actually is a soul. We never actually are bothered only with the body. Over and over, years and years, the child becomes adult, adult becomes further old. Your parents become old. The body has changed. But we still live that person. Why? Because we love the person inside that body. And that is the soul. This is common sense. That we are not only body, but we are actually the soul with whom actually we are relating to. The next way is, so if a person dies, we say he has passed away and that is the soul which has passed away. So if I see a human person or a live person versus a dead matter like a car, if you see, externally you might think that a living species has mouth to speak, eyes to see, heart which is pumping blood and keeping it alive. It has hands and legs. And similarly, the car also has relatively similar features. But there is difference. Why? What is the difference? The car cannot budge an inch without driver inside. Similarly, this body also cannot have any activity without having the soul inside. So the driver of the body is a soul. And this is what we refer to based on Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna tells Arjuna that, Arjuna, please know that you are not this body, but you are the spirit soul. We go to the next proof of existence, and that is based on intuitive understanding. Okay, can I have one of you raise your hand? One of you. Can you please raise your hand? Okay, so he has raised his hand. So that is your hand, correct? So when you raise this, what is this? Hand. It is whose hand? My hand. Are you the hand? No. Then who are you in relation to this hand? Hand belongs to me. It means, in other words, you are the owner of the hand. Correct? Okay. Mr. Ravi, you have a bag there. Correct? It is whose bag? My bag. Are you the bag? You are owner of the bag. Similarly, this is body. Whose body? My body. It means I am not the body, but I am the owner of the body. And who is that owner inside? That is what we call soul. Okay? So that is a different, just simple way of understanding that owner of the body inside is a soul to which this body belongs to. Third way of understanding. Consciousness is a symptom of soul. How do we realize that the soul is there in the body or it has left? When the soul is inside, there are some effects which we see. Okay? Now when the door opens and I see some sunlight coming, not now, like if there is in a room, if from the window the sunlight is coming, right? The mother tells the child, that sun has come up, son. Please get up. Sun is high in the sky. And he says, where? Can you show me? She says, see the sunlight. When the sunlight is out there, bright day is outside, it means that sun is up in the sky. You don't have to go and see the sun or touch the sun to understand that sun does exist. When you see the sunlight, it means that it belongs to sun and there is sun. Correct? Similarly, when we see this body, there is difference between the living and dead body. How? The symptom of sun is sunlight. Similarly, the symptom of presence of soul is consciousness. And how do we define consciousness? How do we appreciate the presence of consciousness? Thinking, feeling, and willing. This is the way consciousness works. Now, I would just give you an example of a photo machine. There is a called as photosensitive or photodetector machine. You bring some object and it detects the color of the object and it says. So suppose if you bring red color or color paper, this machine will say, I see red color. You bring blood, it says, I see red color. You bring red rose, it says, I see red color. Okay. Now same three things you bring in front of a live human being. Bring red color dress and there will be different thinking, there will be different willing, there will be different emotions, right? If you take a red color rose to your boyfriend or girlfriend and that person says, I see red color, you will feel like slapping. Excuse me, it's something more. It's not only red color. There is expression of love. The thought has gone behind to express my love. There is a feeling attached to it and there's a will to please you. The will to serve you. Is it not? That is a consciousness. You just see a drama is going on and then it's getting recorded. The drama is getting recorded by multiple cameras. It's also visualizing, capturing. And probably nowadays some of the machines are also starts analyzing. Right? But is there a difference when the cameras capture versus the set of judges see. There are different feelings, there are different emotions. I'm sure many of us, I cannot forget those days in my childhood when I used to watch movies. Especially if you see these Bollywood movies, there are a lot of melodrama of emotions going on. So we would cry along with the scenes when hero or heroine is beaten up or they are separated. Sometimes we see people sobbing also. And then the neighbor person is giving the tissue. Please control yourself. Please take care of yourself. We coordinate emotions. But the camera doesn't have any such feeling. Why? Because there is a symptom of soul. There is thinking, feeling and willing. A dead body does not have thinking, feeling and willing. Some of us, just 1 minute. Some of us may feel now it's quite cold. A dead body will not say, it's too cold, let's make the temperature a little less. There was a person who was driving a taxi. And suddenly the passenger on the back side tapped him and said, can you please take next right? And he was so shocked. He suddenly put a brake and he was almost going to meet with an accident but just was saved. So the passenger said, why were you so alarmed? I just tapped you gently to tell you to take next right. He said, till yesterday I was driving mortuary van for years. Today is the first time I'm driving taxi with a live human. And that thought that somebody stepping from behind, you can't think a dead body coming and tapping you, right? That is a difference between thinking, feeling and willing, between a live person versus a dead person. Yeah, can I? Okay, that's a good question. That when we are sleeping, we may not have thinking, feeling, and willing completely, but coma also, very true. On coma also. So yes, this is a time when we might feel that they are not thinking, feeling, but if you touch them, they will have the feeling. You pinch them, they'll get up and probably beat you. Okay, then why are you doing this? So it's not. So the soul is resting, what we call supta avastha, but it is still there. Even in coma, I'm a medical person and I see patients in coma day in and day out. There are different types of comas. When we describe them, we pinch them very badly at some particular points around the nasal sinuses here, and then they will curl their body. That is a sign that though they're in deep coma, they are still alive. But at the same time, the consciousness of the soul is so much suppressed that they are not able to express like a living person like you and me. But they are still, they can think and they cannot, they may probably, I am not going to analyze. But we will go through different, probably if we have time, through different experiences of people. But I have personally seen people coming back from something what we call near death experiences. And maybe if I have time, I will share one or two with you. And that has given, which has already been documented enough. You just go on the Google God and type near-death experiences. But I have personally seen people going through deep coma. If they come out of that, you learn from them that we think that they couldn't understand anything, but they have also had got their thinking, feeling and willing. So maybe at the end of the time, end of the session, if you have time, just remind me. Maybe I'll describe one or two of my personal experience also of this near-death. Or people in coma also having this symptoms of life. Okay. So what is the major difference between a living body and a robot or a matter? That a living body undergoes 6 changes while the matter only dwindles. What are the 6 changes? When a living body or a living species takes birth, that is the first change. Then it grows. Then what is the next? It stays for a while. Then it reproduces. Then it dwindles and last is die. It dies. Right? These are the 6 changes which generally most of the living people will go through or they are capable of going through. But the dead matters, once it is produced, it is always going to dwindle over a period of time and going to get destroyed. They can never multiply. correct? Humans or any other living entities can multiply. The cars can never. I wish the car also could multiply. Right? Okay. I'm not sure, but is any one of you from here have ever come through this experience of your own, what we call out-of-body experiences? Sometimes when you get up in the morning, or you have been, you know, like maybe thinking, or maybe you are just drowsy, and then you think that you are somewhere else. You were just not there. Sometimes after those who get, sometimes people get go into deep dreams, dreaming state, and when they come out, we sometimes think, oh, this is just dream. But sometimes some people will feel that, no, I have been to this place. Have any one of you come to this, that when you come to a place, when you see a place, when you meet a person, you feel you have definitely been to this place. You have seen this person somewhere else. Somewhere, and they say, sorry, I was never here before. I have never met you. But you feel somehow, I don't know why, but I feel you are very familiar. This place is familiar. Sorry?
Deja vu.
Any one of you have any got any such experience? This is called as out-of-body experience. And similarly, what I was describing was second thing is called as near-death experiences. There is enough scientific proof already documented in literature, which where hundreds and thousands of people have exactly described these near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences. And that is what, when the soul leaves the body, is still around, what we call them, they're just hovering around, but they see the things from outside. This has happened very recently. I came across a video, and a surgeon who was operating, the patient was under general anesthesia. You might also be able to search it. I don't remember exactly, but it is very recently I had seen that a surgeon who was operating, patient was under general anesthesia, and obviously just surgeons and anesthetists, we all do that. We are not under stress like patients and their relatives, because this is our day in and day out job. So they were joking, and they were talking about some football game. Patient is in GA. When patient came out, patient recovered. When the doctor came to see the patient said, doctor, whatever said and done, but the way you were laughing and joking at the time of surgery, I was getting very stressed. And you go and find out all these experiences are already documented. And they could describe exactly what the doctors were talking when they were completely in coma. Sorry, coma, or they were completely in anesthesia. So if from external point of view, you might think patient has completely either in coma or in anesthesia, but the soul is still watching over. And these are the ways we can understand that, yes, there is soul which is still around. Yeah. If the body is for sure completely not in the consciousness to understand, right? So what is watching over?
But there might be, you know, anesthesia is kind of a chemical which reacted, and that's why people, there's the whole lot of movement and all it.
Okay. Okay, so if you have this out, I will just say one more thing. This has happened, this is also, I guess, in Dr. Ian Stevens' first paper. I'll show you. Yeah, this is Professor... this is Stevenson. He is a cardiologist, and this has happened to him, and it is already, you can find it in, because we have seen, but if you have this doubt, it's fine, I can understand this, that this person who is a cardiologist, once when he was called to an emergency, patient came in complete coma, completely collapsed, and the person was resuscitated, brought to the operation theater, operated, and patient is still under coma. And after a few days, patient got up from the coma. And then when she is talking to the doctor, she said that, doctor, I saw the oak tree, which is just opposite your hospital. And there are also a pair of so-and-so shoes on the terrace. And doctor said, really, I have never noticed it. So Professor Ian Stevenson personally went on the terrace, which always remains closed of the hospital because of the security reasons. He got it open. He went there and he found exactly the description of shoes, what she said. And from the top, he could see the oak tree, what she was exactly describing. It's a like full description he has given. This made him think that when she is in coma, in front of me, when we are operating, there is something which is moving out around. What is that? And this made Professor Stevenson think about it, from where the whole out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences experiment has started, and he has got collected many, many around the world these cases, which has been reported in different books. So there are different books which are already published with his or like many other people, those who have joined them and also have proven with their experience that yes, people have come out with, or people have got this experience of out-of-body and near-death experiences. Okay, let me take time now to tell you quickly about the experience which I had personally come through then, probably about 9 years ago. I was working in India that time in a hospital as a radiologist department head. There was a lady who was a Muslim lady. She was brought to the ICU and she was admitted in the ICU completely in coma. The hospital where I work, they have a different department called a spiritual care department. And their goal is that anybody who is on, every day they will go and meet these people and read something spiritual for them. But those who are specially leaving the body, that time they arrange to see if they can read something for them. Some scriptural thing, because it has been found that the soul leaves the body a little more peacefully. So for this lady who was a Muslim lady, a team of nurses from the spiritual care department went and they were reading slokas from Bhagavad Gita. And also the arrangement was made to bring their own priest and read also from their book at the same time, Islam from Quran. Somehow or other, this lady came back to, she survived through coma and she came back, which is obviously quite a happy thing, but it was very rare. So she came back to consciousness when she survived. She called the doctor who came to see her and she said that somehow when I was in so much of pain, when I was almost in coma, I could feel the pain that I'm going to leave this body. There was something being pronounced near me by one lady which was very soothing to me. I want to make a request that if it happens to me again, that if I come to the stage of dying, can the same lady come and repeat those same words? I might still die next time, but at least it was soothing me a lot. Obviously, the department did not know that who was on duty that time. They brought all these nurses. I think they had about 10 or 11 at that time. And she exactly identified who was the lady, the spiritual nurse who was reciting for her. She said, I did not understand a word of it. I never heard it before. And this, I'm not joking, I've seen it in front of my eyes. She could identify the nurse and she requested her that if this happens to me again, can you please be kind enough to come and recite the same thing? When we see, when we hear, when we read, it makes us think. We can still decide and choose to close our eyes and say, I don't believe. It's our choice. But yes, I have seen, people have written, people have already documented. It's up to us.
The soul that leaves only means difficult times or even normal times?
Normal time also it leaves. Yeah. No. Even sometimes they say that even during sleep sometimes the soul leaves and comes back. That is what is documented in these books. That is what is documented. That it's not that soul will completely. But generally they do not go very far away when they're. That's what is described in these books. Professor Ian Stevenson writes in his books that many times we see that some children have severe phobia of something. They have severe fear in their heart and we wonder from where it has come. And he documents that it's most likely that it is coming from the past life memories. He says that if somebody was killed or his life was ended because of some traumatic experiences like stabbing, then that person in their next life has severe phobia of the firearms or something which is very sharp. Okay, I'm going to show you a small video. Thank you.
two sisters tragically die, but then appear to be reborn by the same mother less than a year later. John and Florence Pollock were the happy parents of two very close sisters, Joanna and Jacqueline, age 11 and 6, when tragedy struck. An out-of-control driver drove their car up onto the sidewalk where the girls were walking along with a friend. All three children died at the scene. Mr. and Mrs. Pollock were understandably devastated, but John's belief in reincarnation, despite his Catholic upbringing, brought him comfort, and he insisted that the girls would come back to them. Less than a year later, the Pollocks were pregnant again, and John immediately knew that twin girls were on the way, despite the doctor's contrary assessment. Sure enough, Florence miraculously delivered identical twin girls, whom they named Gilligan and Jennifer. It was immediately noticed that despite being identical, the girls each had distinctly different birthmarks. Stranger still, the placement of these birthmarks seemed to coincide with birthmarks and scars of their deceased older sisters. When Gilligan and Jennifer were 2 years old, they mysteriously started asking for specific unknown dolls by name. These were toys that had belonged to Joanna and Jacqueline, had been boxed away after the accident, and had never been introduced or mentioned to the twins. They also asked to play on the swings at their sister's former school, which they seemed to be very familiar with, although again, they should have no knowledge of. It was also noticed that they behaved very similarly to their older siblings, and the way they interacted with each other, and right down to the way they held a pencil. Dr. Ian Stevenson, one of the world's foremost experts on reincarnation, documented this as a typical case of children who remember previous lives in his book by that title. By age 5, the girls seemed to forget their older sister's memories and went on to have completely normal lives. The birthmarks that coincided with their older deceased sister's scars, the fact that they had knowledge and familiarity with things they shouldn't, and even the fact that the Pollocks had another set of identical twins all seem to point towards something much more than just a coincidence. Congratulations!
So similar to this, there are many studies, but this is one study which is quite famous of Mrs. Shukla, which is also included in the book and study of Professor Stevenson, that this girl was born to Guptas less than 5 years of age. She would always talk of going to one place called as Bharatpur in India, and she always wanted and pulled her parents that let's go there. And when finally the parents couldn't understand, they agreed to go there. And then it was turned out that she could identify, she could guide them to a place where she said she belonged to in her last life. And when she reached that place, she could identify the family members, and she said that this was my husband, this is my child. And so this was also a proven case that she remembered the memories of her past life. And most importantly, somebody in my own college, Mr. Deep Kapadia, he was studying in the same college as I was, as one of my seniors. And then he also had got some past life memories. He's also a documented case, I guess you can find out from his name, how he was killed from his previous life, and he had scars on this life of the same thing where he had scars. Now the question might come in your life, or question might come in your mind, that why some people remember, why don't I? Would you like to remember your past life? Yes or no? No, you're intelligent. If you say yes, just think of these people, those who have got these memories. It is not easy. It's quite painful sometimes. It is stated by Stevenson in his book that those who had got most painful death or those who had got really a lot of trauma, they carry, because of their strong attachment, they carry their memory. So probably we did not have such painful things in our last life. So we are lucky. Secondly, if we will remember that we were humans last time, it's fine. But there is chance that it may be coming from different species, and I don't think we might like to know whether in our past life we were dogs or hogs or cat or whatever. So it's just a way nature has decided that we should, generally it's better not to remember, and that's how it is. So I'm going to share some of the personalities on reincarnations. Benjamin Franklin: finding myself to exist in the world, I believe I shall in some shape or other always exist. John Adams: those souls who revolted against God were placed here to transmigrate through various species of animals, birds, reptiles, etc. And Socrates: I'm confident that there truly is such a thing as living again and living spring from the dead. This is what is exactly what is also given in Bhagavad Gita in 2nd chapter, in 22nd shloka. It is mentioned that just like a person, when our garments become old and we change, we give up our old garments and take a new. Similarly, for the soul, this body is just like a garment. When it becomes old, it becomes useless, it becomes troublesome, it better sheds it off, gives it up, and take a new one. Each one of us, at this time when it is youth, is generally not a stress. But ask a person who is in 70s and 80s and 90s and 95s what physical stress they have. Many times it's very, very difficult to maintain that body because it's only the source of misery most of the time. It's just because of the attachment and fear of unknown that it's not easy to give up the body. But old age is definitely quite a painful thing to have most of the time. And that is why the soul also wants to give the old one and is looking forward to a new, fresh body. Now to the question, why should I know that I'm a soul? What is the advantage of knowing my real identity as a soul? What is wrong if I just think I'm this body and I can just live my life? There are people around, or till I actually asked that, am I something more? I was still doing my studies, I was doing my job, I'm doing my family duties. I can continue to do the same thing. What is the advantage of knowing the real identity that I also have a soul which is eternal? Why should I know this? The simple analogy which is given is that this lady who has got a nice beautiful parrot, many people have patted their house, right? And it's put in a very nice golden cage. She loves the parrot so much that she has got a golden cage for her. And then every day, out of her love for the parrot, what she does? She polishes the cage very, very nicely. She wants that it should be most shiny, it should remain fresh, it should look very nice. But then looking after the cage, she forgets to feed the bird. And what happens to the bird? The bird finally dies. Lack of attention, lack of food. Similarly, when we do not understand, thank you, that we are not this body, but we also have a soul, what happens in our life? We might just give attention to this outside covering of the soul called as body and put all our energy, all our vigor, all our strength, all our everything into this body. And we will not take care of the soul will also suffer. I'll give you a small story. This story, some people might have heard because it's one of my most favorite stories. A person once was completely frustrated with his life. So he sold off everything, whatever he had. He took whatever wealth he could collect. And with his family and whatever wealth he had, he started relocating himself to a close by island. Probably he was coming to Singapore. But he was coming through a port. It happened that in the middle of the sea, when he was almost in the quite mid inside the ocean. They hit a straw. The boat in front of it, him, it just cracked. Probably Titanic was happening. And everything started going down the water, including he himself was drowning. People were drowning. And in front of his eyes, everything was washed away. He was trying to save himself, save his family members, but obviously he couldn't. Somehow he was just trying to keep alive or save himself, and he was trying to see if some help can be called for. To his good fortune, another boat was coming from far. So he started shouting, yelling very loudly, as he was trying to keep himself alive for help. And to his good fortune, somebody on the other boat did spot him. They brought the boat close to him, they saved him, and he was saved. When he took a breath of relief, it was no more relief for him. Just a thought that his everything, including his family members, are no more there, made him feel completely devastated. He started thinking, was it actually worthy that I am still alive, or maybe I should have probably also drowned. He was very, very sad. Obvious, right? The people on the boat asked him, pacified him, and after a while, after inquiring what had happened to him when he was feeling completely devastated, they said, we have a suggestion for you. We belong to a small island which is quite close by, and we have a norm. We select a king, or somebody is allowed to become a king, but the king becomes king and rules for 1 year. He gets all the facilities for 1 year, but at the end of 1 year, we go and drop him to another island which is completely dark jungle forest infested with wild animals. And by the way, we have just dropped our last king. We are going back to our kingdom, and we don't have anybody till now who is willing to become king for the next year. The post is still available. Do you want to take that post? So he's really thinking that I have just now a big zero, and there is an opportunity to become hero. Should I take it? Should I not? Should I take it? Should I not? 1 year. Will you take it? No. Intelligent. Gunjan is intelligent. Gunjan says, why think of 1 year? Come on. But he's thinking that anyhow, I have nothing at this moment. Can I take it and make something good in it? So he agrees. He goes. First month, he's just watching the kingdom. He sees how everything is going. Second month, he calls the ministers and says, take me to the island where you take and drop the kings at the end of 1 year. So obviously he's a king, he can be taken. So he goes there and he sees, and obviously this is a deep, dark forest, absolutely non-livable. He comes back. After a few days of thinking, he calls the minister and says, please bring an army of about 100 workers, send them to that island, and get that island completely cleared. In next few months, he got the roads, the palaces, ponds, very beautifully made, and the island changed. Probably that was Singapore. The Singapore, if you see the old time and now, it's completely changed. And at the end of 11 months, he called the minister and he said, I'm ready to retire. Please find your new king and you can come and drop me to the next island today. And the ministers were thinking, oh my God, he is intelligent. We never thought of it. They had seen so many people coming, becoming king, enjoying to their best, thinking that this is the last year of their life. And obviously crying and wailing when they were being dropped to that island. But this person used his intelligence to make his further journey better. And that is what is important. When we know that we have a further journey ahead, the soul is eternal, soul is not going to die. What we will do with this body is something which will make our further journey more peaceful. Believe me or not, if you see a person who is dying in front of you, very rarely you will find a person who will say, I'm satisfied, ready to go. Most of the time, even a 90 years old person, when they come to death, when doctors go, they tell, can I please get some more time? I still have something more to do. Why? Because we did not prepare. If we are prepared, on 11th month or so, we can tell that we are ready to go. This is a reason why it is important to know what are we. We are not this body, we are soul, which is eternal. We have a journey which is not going to end at the with this body, but it's going to continue. How can I make my future journey also comfortable? And that is a work I need to do today. If we work today for our future, bright future, will not repent at the end of the life. And that is a reason or advantage of knowing our real identity. So it is described that we think that we have one body, but it is described that we don't have one body, but we have three body. The one which we see with our gross eye is called as gross body, or it's also called as sthula body in Bhagavad Gita, which is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether. It is supposed to be formless, right? But you might think that you have a form. The same body which is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether has a form now, correct? But it is formed because of soul. As soon as the soul leaves, we all know that the body starts disintegrating. The earth, water, fire, air, ether will go into their own elements. Is it obvious? We all know this, right? So, this thula body by itself has no form. Beyond this, thula body is another body which is called a subtle body or sukshma body according to the word Sanskrit. And it is made of mind, intelligence and false ego. And last, most important, is spiritual body, which is the soul. And soul is actually the one which is the one which gives a form. It's just like if you have a piece of cloth, it is just plain. But if you put your finger inside, if you put a fist inside, it's going to give shape to the cloth. Similarly, this outer body, which is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether, gets a form because of the soul inside. The soul gives a form. The gross body is actually formless. Coming to an important point. Do you want to see the soul? Can I see soul? Anybody interested? Or we're just satisfied knowing that I'm soul? If I can see, why not? Correct? Okay. So you see a rose here. Correct? Sorry. You see a picture of rose here. So if you see a rose, if I ask you, is there rose essence into it? Do you see the rose essence? No. You see? Just a rose. But does the rose essence exist? It is there. When I show you the sesame seed, and if I ask you, what is this? Sesame seed. If I ask you, can you see the sesame oil inside it? Answer is, no, you don't see. But does it exist? It does. When you see milk, or probably soya milk here, healthy version of milk in Singapore, right? So when you see a milk or soya milk, do you see paneer or tofu inside? It is there? It is there. But can we see? No. And if you see sugar cane, the sugar is there inside, but can we see? No. Does it exist inside? Does it exist? It does exist. But there is a method or there is a process by which you will be able to see the rose essence from the rose or rose oil from the rose. Similarly, the sesame oil, paneer or sugar. So it is a process. So once we follow a process, we can actually see the soul. Do you want to see the soul under microscope? Can you see it? Microscope is meant to look for material things. Fungus, bacteria. Correct? You want to measure the length of a given thing. What do you use? Scale, right? You can go down to vernier calipers or you can go to different types of, but it's finally a scale you use when you want to measure a length. If you want to measure temperature of something, what do you use? Thermometer. If you want to measure pH of a liquid, what do you use? Litmus paper, correct? Can you measure length with litmus paper? Can you see fungi with scale? No. Each subsection of science has their own tools to see their own objects, correct? You cannot interchange. Using the physics tools, you cannot see the chemicals. Similarly, the material tools are meant for material vision. And we saw that soul is what? Spirit. It's not matter. How can we see matter with our physical tools? We can see if we use spiritual tools. There is a process. There are people, those who have seen other soul, they have seen their own souls, or probably they have realized their own souls when they do spiritual practices like yoga, meditation, and devotional services. So there is a process. It is possible to see. You need to follow recommended process. It is described that the size of the soul is as small as 1/10,000 tip of a hair. So if you take a tip of the hair, divide it into 100 part, take each small part and divide it into another 100 part, that is the approximate size of the soul. Whatever may be the size of the body, may it be amoeba, may it be an elephant, it is the same. And it is said that it stays in the region of the heart. Don't think that it stays in the heart. Because when I heard this few years ago, I said, then what happens when the heart transplant happens? The soul exchanges? No. That's why it is described that it is actually the consciousness. The soul is pervading in the body in the form of consciousness, but its location is in the region of heart. It's not that it stays in the heart. Few of the qualities or characteristic of the soul based on Bhagavad Gita. So we now come down to the teachings of Bhagavad Gita directly. We all know that Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna by Krishna. When he was lamenting in the Kurukshetra that he doesn't want to kill his own kinsmen who are on the opposite party, he better go away to the forest instead of killing his own kinsmen. And then Krishna speaks this knowledge of eternality of soul. In second chapter he says, Na jayate mriyate va kadachin nayam bhutva bhavitavana bhuyah ajo nityam shashvatoyam purano nahanyate hanyamane sharire. Says na jayate. Jayate means does not take birth. Soul does not take birth. Na mriyate, it does not die. Is it not a big relief? We do feel a lot of pain when our own close ones leave us and go. But it's a big relief to know that the soul is eternal. The soul may leave this body, might go ahead in the journey, may not be staying with us in the way we want them to stay, but at least they are existing. They are there. That is what is said. And we already saw the proofs of reincarnations. The soul is eternal. It continues its journey. Na jayate mriyateva. Then next one is, it does not come into being and it does not stop being existing. It is always there. It's unborn, eternal, ever-existing, primeval, and it is not slain when the body is slain. So when you kill a body or when a person dies, the soul doesn't die. It's just the body dies. Wow, it's a great relief. But also great relief for the murderers. They might think, I'm just killing the body. The soul is still going to be alive, so no problem. Can they give this excuse to the judges and say, I did not kill the soul because soul is eternal? Good to know, right? See, sometimes the knowledge also can help the murderers. Right? No, it's not like this. Each soul, when it takes a body, it has its own reaction of karma and it has its own luggage which it carries. And no one has right to come in the way of that soul's future or its own way of life which is supposed to be going. Neither we should play with our own body or our own soul. So suicide nor homicide. It should never be done. The next is, it says, the soul is individual. It's unbreakable, insoluble. It cannot be dried, or it cannot be burnt. It's everlasting, present everywhere, unchangeable, immovable, immovable, eternally the same. So it doesn't change basically. The soul doesn't change, it's the body which changes. And that is why this point is important, why I'm saying this part of the soul, that soul does not, it's individual. Because many times we think that the soul at the end of life will merge into a big Brahman or a light. But it is very clearly mentioned that it is not breakable. So it is not that it was existing in the whole thing and a small part came and then it has now merged. It is inherible. It is going to maintain its own identity. But yes, some part of scripture say that it goes in the Brahman. How does it, how do we explain both the parts? If a parrot, which is green in color, goes and sits in a big, nice tree, which is completely green with the leaves, sometimes you feel that as if it has merged. But the parrot still is there. Similarly, the soul, when it goes, it may be in the Brahman, but does not mean that it loses its identity. It always remains individual, which is mentioned here. It is said that the soul is invisible, inconceivable, immutable. And last part, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 15th chapter that each living entity, may it be a human or animal or any species, are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling hard with their six senses, which includes the mind. So basically, each soul is part and parcel of the supreme whole, which we call God. And being the supreme, part of the supreme whole, we have the same quality as a whole, but we are different in quantity. I'll give you a simple example. There is an ocean here, and you want to take out and analyze the chemical constituent in the water of an ocean. What do? You don't bring the whole ocean, right? Just take some water, analyze. And once you analyze how much is the sodium, potassium, whatever inside, then you know that the whole water is similar. Correct? But can you say that the water in your container is same as the ocean? It's same in quality, but different in quantity. This is exactly same with the soul. Soul being part and parcel of God, it has same qualities of God. But we can never say that we are God, because God is big, much bigger than what we can think. Why do I say that? Because the soul, also called as Jivatma, and the super soul or Lord, also called as Paramatma, he is infinite, while the Jivatma is infinitesimal. It can know only what is going on in their own body, but God can know what is happening in everyone's body. And that is why the God or the Lord is master, while we are servant. We are equal in quality, but less in quantity. How do we understand this part? Because we can make small swimming pool, while the God can create oceans. We can fly rockets, but the Lord floats gigantic planets. Very difficult to read in this, so much of dark. Okay, I can... What is this? I can invent a dome, light, but the God created moonlight. We make ordinary dolls, but the Lord made us all. This actually somebody had written a poem, which I just picked a small part because the poem was very long. I'm only Brahman, but Krishna or the Lord is Parabrahman. My power is limited, but his potencies are unlimited. So, what is the relationship of a soul to the super soul or the whole? That we are part and parcel, as already Krishna has told in Bhagavad Gita, that we are part and parcel of the Supreme God. That's what is mentioned here in 15th chapter, that Krishna himself says that the Jiva or the soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And then as a part, what is the beauty of the part? If this hand, which has finger, is part of this body, right? If I like cake, my hand, what does it do? Fingers take the cakes and put it in the mouth. But if the fingers start thinking, every time I'm feeding this mouth, this stomach is enjoying, this tongue is enjoying. And what am I doing? I'm just working. Next time I'm going to enjoy myself. So the hand with the finger picks up the cake and starts trying to enjoy. Makes the cake into pieces, but can it enjoy? And the finger says, I'm not going to feed this now to this mouth, which is always enjoying. Let it do its own work. I'm not going to work. Finally, the body becomes weak. And what is going to happen to the hand and finger? They will also be weak. It is obvious that it's very logical to understand that the part has to serve the whole. Because when we serve the whole, the part also gets connected. A person or a servant of a king who stays in the palace, drives Rolls-Royce, he goes in the same car as the king, Rolls-Royce, right? Does the master says, the AC is only meant for me, you should have a heater around you. Or the fragrance which is nicely in the car or in the house is only meant for me. You cannot enjoy it. Close your nose. No, just being attached and obedient to the master, the servant enjoys the same thing what the master is also getting. Importance is obedience. The day the servant thinks, why is he enjoying? I'm going to enjoy separate from him. Then he's going to get kicked out. Correct? So, we come to the final checklist. In the beginning, we said we are going to see these points. Now, can I ask all of you, the first question which I asked, can you identify yourself? Who are you or who am I? We are soul. We have this body, we have our identity with the body, but that's not all in all. We are actually the soul inside to whom our beloveds actually love to relate to. This body is not with which they are relating. They are relating through the medium of this body at this moment. The moment we will leave from inside, they will no more be able to relate to this body. So it is the soul inside to which we relate to actually. Do you know what is the benefit? What is the benefit of knowing that we are not the body, but we are soul which is eternal? So that we can work on it. We can prepare for our next journey while we are doing this journey. It's not that we stop eating, we stop doing things, but we also prepare for our next journey. That is the importance of knowing our real identity. We all know the difference between dead matter and spirit. Proof of existence, first was common sense. He has passed away. Somebody has passed, that is soul. Second was intuitive. My bag, my hand, my body. Third was out-of-body experiences. Sorry, third was consciousness is a symptom of soul. And consciousness means thinking, feeling, willing. Fourth is out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences. And last is past life memories or reincarnations. Okay, can I see soul? Can I see? You can see the soul if you follow the process. There is a process. And it is understandable that it has to be a spiritual process. Because we are trying to understand spirit soul. Famous personalities, characteristic of the soul, some of the very important to understand that it is never born, it does not die when the body dies, it's eternal, ever existing. And one of the very important quality which I forgot to mention that time, Lord is, or the whole, is called as Sat Chit Ananda. It is eternal, full of knowledge, full of happiness, bliss. And that is why the soul also has this quality that we are originally eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. That is why we are always wanting to be happy. It's the quality of our soul to be happy. What is our position in respect to the God? We are same in quality but less in quantity, or we are minor in quantity. And being a small part of the whole, it's our duty to serve the soul, serve the whole, to make our life spiritually strong so that we can continue with our journey in a nice way. Any questions? The same what we went through now, the revision of all the points. Now any questions?
So we work with psychologists also, and most psychologists believe, and especially the famous ones, the eminent ones, they believe that we are the body and we are only the body. So I was a part of a conference organizing committee, so I had gone to this very top psychologist's house for the meeting, and I had so the psychologist was talking to this 4-year-old daughter, and the psychologist said, we change, so our cells are changing, our body is changing, so every 7 years all our cells get replaced. So I'm not me anymore because my body is completely replaced, so I'm not me anymore, and I'm a different person altogether. And then the 4-year-old daughter replies, but you're still you, but you're still you. And it was very surprising to me that that eminent scientist did not understand what was so obvious to the small children.
You heard this? What? Everybody could hear? Yeah? So it's basically common sense, but I'll tell you one thing. Most of the time, things which are common sense, it's understandable even without being brilliant involved. But if you decide that I don't want to accept it, then we close our eyes to the common sense or something which is obvious. And then we say, I don't believe. If a person is sleeping, you can wake up. But if a person is acting to sleep, it's difficult to wake up. You understand the difference? Right? Because the person is trying to show that he's sleeping, you try and the person shows, oh, I cannot be woken up. Because he's not actually sleeping. Ignorance is bliss. But sometimes we are not ignorant. We know because things are obvious. But just because of our ego, probably sometimes because of our strong belief in something, we just want to close our eyes. And that is a time when we say that that thing is falling on the blind spot of our retina. You know what is this? Something which falls on your retina, you are able to see it. But on the retina, there is a small spot called as blind spot where there is origin of optic nerve. In anything which falls on retina, you cannot see on the blind spot. So thing which is falling on you, you can see it, but you don't want to see it, then we say probably it's falling on the blind spot. That's why you're just closing your eyes. So this is what is there, that yes, it's very common that we are not this body. But if you don't want to accept it, we will never accept it. Thank you very much for your contribution. Anything else? Anybody would like to comment? Anybody would like to ask question? Okay, so you are asking about concept of mukti, right? Basically, that is a question which many of us come to, that what is going to happen to me at the end of the death? So there is something called as mukti, or also we use the word liberation. And what is actual liberation? Liberation is the soul, when it comes into this cycle, what we call cycle of birth and death. Birth, then as I said, there are 6 changes. It grows, stays, dwindles, finally dies. And then again enters another body. And this cycle of birth and death continues. But this is there till the soul is in this material world. When the soul reaches that stage because of whatever endeavors or whatever, because of whatever activities he does, that it reaches a spiritual stage, then it can get liberated from this cycle of birth and death, and it goes to something called as spiritual world. This is described in scripture that there is a higher dimension which is called a spiritual world, and which in some scriptures it will be used a word as liberation. Everything is given in different scriptures with different words. People say that you will go to heaven. But till you go to heaven, you might just keep on coming and going into this cycle. But one day, when you are completely happy, you go to a place where the Supreme Father stays. Bible describes it as a place where the Lord stays, is called as heaven. Quran says that you go to Jannat. And that is what? Where the Lord stays. And that is what in some scriptures will describe it as liberation or mukti. The place, or sometimes we call it Vaikuntha. The Lord goes where the Lord is staying. You find it in different scriptures across the globe, different religion. It's just the difference in the words they use, but it's finally the same message. But till we reach that stage of final liberation, there is a cycle of birth and death which keeps on going. It is also described that what is your next body going to be? It depends on the activity of the karma which you do in this life. It's obvious. Newton's third law. Action is equal and reaction is going to be equal and opposite to your action. Correct? So if we do good karmas, we are going to be either getting a better body or probably also get liberated. And if we do the activities which are not so conducive, then it's going to take us to the body of a lower species. There's full big discussion on this, which comes on karma. I think one of the days we might also have karmas, right? So probably one of the session also describes karmas, which also decides, one of the very important deciding factor of the next journey of the soul after this body. Yes.
Something which I heard from your class, previous class. So we keep on taking birth because we have some unsatisfied desires. So when a soul dies, the body dies, with some desires unfulfilled, it will take another birth so that it can fulfill those desires. And mukti is the state of your soul when all your desires have been fulfilled, or you have been able to get rid of all your desires. So you are completely desireless, with the only hope of going back to Godhead, or you know, your original karmaika, because you are after all a part of that super soul.
Yes.
I'm sorry, the whole reincarnation thing also depends on when you are born, as far as existence.
Absolutely.
Because why would anyone be would like to be born poor? Right? Is it like some past? Because
this is actually very obvious to understand as you are asking. Finish your question first.
Because another part of it is that you're talking about life experiences which past life experiences people remember. So there would also basically be a lot of more people because of the life experiences they would have would remember, eventually go and remember their past experiences. Right? Many ways I find the whole concept of reincarnation very hard to reconcile with.
Actually, you are yourself contradicting your own thing. You are saying that nobody likes to be born poor. Nobody likes to be born in a less privileged circumstances, correct? But why somebody is born in less privileged, why somebody is born with silver spoon in their mouth? What has decided? Is the God or the person who is, or the force, whatever you want to use the word, is it completely chaotic situation that somebody just, somebody goes here and somebody... Depending on their own will, or it's like, is it like US embassy that somebody's day is good, they will give visa to everybody, and today my mood is not good, I will cancel everybody's visa. It doesn't happen like that, right? There is some process. There is a reason why it is done, and that is one of the actually more reason to believe that reincarnation is there, because we are carrying our karmas from their past life. Why am I born with two hands, two legs, completely my body is, why somebody is born with who is blind or who is deaf, what the person was at birth was having less than me. Why?
You are saying that someone's poor because he or she might have done not so good deeds in the past life?
It is described in scripture also that those who do good will be born in a either higher family, means the rich family, or they'll have beautiful features, or they'll be very intelligent, or they'll be born in a very... Brahmana family, that in the families who are very spiritually advanced, it's already given that this is how it is decided. Otherwise, if you do not believe into karma and reincarnation, then the difference in the way people are born, it itself becomes very chaotic. Correct? Why? Why you are sitting here and why somebody is in Indonesia is not even having two meals properly? What extra did you do at your birth to be here today? Because you did something. Or do you think that it is just because of somebody's causeless mercy you were chosen?
No, I got the opportunity as well.
But that's you why you got the opportunity. It's very obvious. Sorry?
I said you had an opportunity. Someone is not having two meals in Indonesia. You or she would have got the opportunity growing up. You or she might disappear. So, anyway, that also justifies in some way the caste system, right? What you're saying right now.
See, caste system also basically, let me tell you that it is described that caste is not what you are born in your family. Actual caste system is with your karmas. If a person who is born, who has karmas of, who is intelligent, that person should be treated as a more intelligent Hindus, but it should not be based on your birth, which is sometimes mishandled by the society, or which have been mishandled by society for quite a long time, that those who are born in particular castes, they are given higher privileges than others or like that. But generally, caste is not supposed to be. But yeah, you can see, basically it's the overall privileges with a person is born or whether a person is derived of some privilege. And I actually feel that that is one of the strong reasons for us to understand that it's something coming from behind. God or whoever is a deciding person is not favor somebody, I don't like this person today, I'm in not good mood, today I fought with my wife, so I will send everybody to hell today. No. Somebody is running this whole cycle, cannot be that brainless or that heartless or cannot be that unfair, has to have some rules and regulations. And what are those rules and regulations? It's the karma. Even the material physics laws also says every action has equal and opposite reaction. In material world also, we find this. So why do we feel that such laws do not exist away? Just one of the ways. You had something more also you were asking after this? Yeah, one of the following is on karma itself, and that will explain this in much deeper way. Today it was mainly about the soul, but the soul's journey ahead, which it depends, will depend, and that will be discussed in much more detail in the following, I think next to next session, right? Fourth session, I guess. So. Anybody else has any comments or questions? Yes.
Just from the example of the parrot and cage, like if you don't feed the parrot will ask for the food, right? I mean hungry, right? In the same way, the soul asks, like, I'm hungry or something.
Okay, so he's asking that the way the parrot, if the parrot is not fed, the parrot will make some noise, right? And parrot will try at least to get some attention, whether we give or not is a different thing. Similarly, when the soul is not fed or not nurtured, will the soul make noise? A conscious soul does make. Look in your own heart. When we do something wrong or seemingly wrong, our conscious does prick us. That is a parrot making noise, that you are not feeding me right thing, you are feeding me spoiled food. When we need to do something good, just the day you extended yourself to help a poor person, you gave some food, you gave some help, you just helped some blind person to cross the road. It was not a big deal. It was really not a big deal. But do that satisfaction a little more than going and having a good party with your friends. There is a difference. We feel that. We all feel that. There is a parrot inside, which tells us that, yes, this is a good food you are giving me, this is not, because they feel nourished. When we do good activities, because the soul understands, this good activity is going to help me to grow better. This is going to make obstacles on my life. So that is what is the conscience. When we use the word conscious, it is the soul inside and the super soul inside, which tells and always is guiding us. And that is one very good thing, that a conscience, which actually is a word which we use for the guidance from the soul inside or the super soul inside, it is always helping us to decide whether this is right or wrong. Most of the time. Not all the time, but yeah, most of the time. You have something to say?
Yeah,